The Tom Woods Show, episode 1126.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, you may have noticed it is impossible to have a rational conversation about guns these days. The perfect time for my brand new ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Guns. Get your free copy at wrongaboutguns.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I've got Titus Gabel with us today. He is founder, president, and CEO of Free Private Cities, Inc. You can check them out at freeprivatecities.com. And this is, shall we say, a novel approach to how to achieve liberty in our lifetimes. And it's a multifaceted approach. There are different ways that a private city might be envisioned or brought about, different models for it. So I'm going to let him explain to us what this is all about. We've covered topics kind of like this here and there in the past, so I'll put links to those at tomwoods.com/1126. But for now, Titus, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, I am very glad to talk to you. I think what you're doing is extremely interesting. We're starting to see this kind of idea appear in different formats. Of course, there's seasteading, which we've heard about, and there's the Startup Societies Foundation, and then this whole idea of private cities is very interesting. I just read your article at fee.org about exactly what you have in mind here. Let's maybe start off with having you explain what you mean by a private city. What does it look like? What does it consist of?
Yeah, I think I call it a free private city to differentiate myself from projects all over the world where just private investors are putting something up and maybe have some private services offered. A free private city is really something where, in an ideal world, you have complete sovereignty, and the private companies offers you the basic services of a government, which is the protection of life, liberty, and property. And you pay a certain amount for those services per year. And the big advantage to our current societies is that your respective rights and obligations are laid down in a written agreement between you and the provider, which cannot be changed unilaterally. And apart from that, you are free to do as you choose. I mean, as long as you're not harming the others. So that is the basic idea of a free private city. I'm well aware that in the world of today, probably the complete autonomy is not a possible thing, not yet. So I would be happy if, and I would still consider it to be a free private city, if you have a legal autonomy granted from a host nation, like a special economic zone next level, comparable to the relationship Hong Kong-China, right? Hong Kong is considered a special administrative zone. They have own government, own rules, own security, and all that, and even an own currency. So if we could replicate that model as a framework, and then it's not a government, but it's a private company, and you are secured by a contract, and means you're a contracting party on an equal footing with a secured legal position, instead of being subject to the ever-changing whims of politics, and you only become part of it if you like the offer. So this is really one of voluntarism, if you want, a contractual society.
So the services that a private company would provide for me in such a city would be the ones I've come to expect from government? Are we talking about legal services, policing, some of the basic so-called public goods?
Correct. Yeah, I mean the framework of the free private city, the idea that this is a private for-profit company offering you those services, is giving a lot of room to different models. But I want to make this as a business, right? Because I think profit is very important. It's not the bad thing many people think. Profit is giving the right incentives. And one of the incentives is that I do not waste resources. And the other one is that I treat my customers well. And once this is basically the idea, then I have to reflect, okay, what do I think is really wanted by the people? And I'm originally from Germany, but I left the country 4 years ago, and I'm now living in Monaco, the second smallest country in the world. And an interesting thing, an interesting observation which I made there is that I, after a while, I recognized that I'm absolutely not interested in becoming involved into Monaco politics. And I asked myself, why not? I was always interested in politics for the last 30, 35 years in Germany. But the point is, I wanted just to be left alone. That's all I want. And I expect from my government to give me some services. Like you said, these are the basic services. These are some infrastructure, a legal system, a rule of law system, police, security. And I'm willing to pay a little bit for that, right? The fair amount. But for the rest, please leave me alone. And then I ask around other people in Monaco, whom I knew, and ask them, why are you here? And basically, most of them said the same, right? They want to make business all over the world. They want to have a safe space here. They're willing to pay something for that. And that's it. And I thought, okay, if this is what we really want, then you don't need a prince. A private company can do that, right? So, and in my offer, I would say this is, from a philosophical standpoint, it's a classical liberal minimal state, but it's not offered by a state, but a private company. So that means, indeed, there are some rules there. You have a fallback private law, but other than that, you can agree with your counterparty to any legal system you want. But as a fallback, we have a law and we have some regulations. There will be a police there. You can put up your own security on top of that, but there will be some rules, and there will be a kind of a house right to reject people or to kick out people who misbehave or becoming criminals, and you will get some infrastructure, some offers, but that is, if you want, it's what all the classical philosophers have found out, be it John Locke, be it Ludwig von Mises, or others, that the only justification of the state is to provide security and peace. And for all the rest, people are too different to come to a common understanding. So we leave people be as they are, but they need something to make it sure that they can send their children on the street, even at midnight, like here in Monaco, and that they are safe. And that people who are destroying this safety or disturbing it, that they are kicked out in order to have a peaceful life for the overwhelming majority that want to live peacefully with each other and want to follow what they think they can do best. So this is the idea in a nutshell.
What you're describing, of course, is not quite like, let's say, one of the city-states of classical Greece. You're talking about a city that would be granted autonomy by some existing state, and then within that autonomy, your private company could function. What's in it for the state granting the autonomy? Why would they have any interest in consenting to this?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that is one of the crucial questions, of course. Why should a state do that? Because it means giving up some of their power, some of their sovereignty, not all. Well, the answer is basically comparable to what was the answer in the Middle Ages in Europe, right? Where these independent cities or free cities popped up. The Hanseatic League and all that. They were still part of the Holy Roman Empire, and the emperor was still basically the head of the state, but he had not real power at that time. And why were the dukes and the earls, why did they agree to that? Well, the answer is it's easy, because they had some interest, because they discovered over time, at the beginning they really fought those new cities and didn't want to let them go. But then they found out that a lot of prosperity was gained through those cities, and a lot of wealth was created. And this wealth also extended to the surrounding areas, which were still in their part of the, in their territory. And so today, the same, I would say, okay, look, if I go to a state and say, look, here's an area, there's nothing there, or a handful of people, very poor people, are living there. And now we are coming, and we build here a new Monaco, a new Hong Kong. But in order to do that, you have to grant some autonomy. You will keep, we will still be part of your sovereignty. You might even get some of our income. Of deals are conceivable. But we bring investors because investors trust us. We have basically a clear legal system, an established legal system. We will bring non-corrupt people from all over the world with a high reputation and all based on contract. And you will also gain from that as a state because where formerly was nothing, there suddenly is a big powerhouse, economic powerhouse established, and then all the surrounding areas will prosper too. You can see this in Hong Kong on the Chinese side of the border. There's a big belt of wealth, Shenzhen and other places. The same Singapore on the side of Malaysia, and even here in Monaco on the French side, a very wealthy belt, densely populated, and they're all paying taxes to the mother country. So that can be a win-win situation for other countries. And the other, I would say, plus we have is that kind of this development has already begun with the special economic zones. So special economic zones are already an attempt of states to create a different legal environment to attract more investors and also to attract high potentials and people. And I'm putting basically this one step further. I say, okay, that is a special economic zone plus, because we really want to govern ourselves. We do not want to be subject to the rules of the host nation or only to a very limited degree. If you leave us alone and we are not doing harm to you, we can negotiate everything around customs, about exports, imports, immigration, and all that. And you are entitled to part of our income or have even a share in the free private city. So that is something that can be really negotiated. And then, like a special economic zone, it will be established. And I would look for a guarantee of 50 or 99 years of legal stability with the host nation.
Okay, more juicy questions for you in just a minute after we thank our sponsor. Folks, it's time once again for the story of Bad Luck Ichabod. Ah, poor Bad Luck Ichabod. He kept watching everybody pass him by for promotions and advancement. He saw everyone happy and fulfilled except himself. Now, why is that? Because Bad Luck Ichabod did not know about Skillshare, the online learning platform that has over 18,000 classes that'll help give you a leg up in your career or help you start build that side hustle. You know, I'm always talking about all the opportunities out there online and the importance of lifelong learning. Well, Skillshare embodies all of that. Classes in business, marketing, entrepreneurship, technology, and more. Plus, join the millions of students at Skillshare with a special deal as a listener of The Tom Woods Show. Get 2 months of access to all 18,000 classes for just 99 cents. How do you get that? Head over to Skillshare.com/Woods right now. That's Skillshare.com/Woods. Let me ask you a devil's advocate question, the sort that really hostile opponents might offer. I don't mean libertarians who don't quite understand how it works, but people who wouldn't want it to work, even if it could. And that would be, suppose there's some abuse from your private company, to whom would I appeal? Now, it's interesting they ask that kind of question because, well, in states as they exist now, if the state harasses you, to whom do you appeal? Well, you have to appeal to the state. That is the appeal. There is no other place you can go. And so they would portray this as some uniquely wicked thing about what you're trying to do, even though they endure this every day of their lives in the existing state system. But in any case, what kind of answer would there be to that?
Yeah, I think a better answer than in the current states, because one of the mechanisms is that we will put up some dispute resolution and even some courts in cases my residents have some issues amongst themselves as a service. But in any cases where there's a dispute about the citizens or the residents contract. This is the contract between me as a city provider and the residents. Then we would go outside to independent arbitration. We would not go to my courts, right? We would go to an, like in international trade, you know, there are several well-known arbitration institutions, be it in London, Paris, or Singapore, or New York. And even because this is relatively costly, I would say even to avoid that costly international arbitration, we would offer what's called ad hoc arbitration. That, and the mechanism goes as follows. If you, Tom, you would be a resident and you would think that I have violated the contract that us, we two have amongst each other, you would then say, make a complaint. And if I would reject the complaint, you would say, okay, I want arbitration and ad hoc arbitration. That's the cheapest I can imagine. Okay. And then ad hoc arbitration would work as follows. You would name one arbiter. I would name one and they would agree on a chairman. And the procedure, and that's it. And then we have to see what the outcome is. Of course, you could say then, as devil's advocate, yeah, but you have the police, so you are not like an international arbitration. You can follow the ruling, or you can't. Well, that is true and not true. If I'm not following basically my own rules, which say, okay, there's an arbitration procedure and then we will see what the outcome is. If I'm not following my own rules and respect those arbitration tribunal decisions, I mean, people would move away and I would lose my reputation and I would never be able to set up a second free private city, right? I mean, you have a good example here is Monaco. On paper, the prince is a very, very powerful. He can veto any law that the parliament comes up, he can set, make and propose new legislation. But if he would do, if he would come up with crazy legislation, or if he would disregard the court's decisions to the government's disadvantage, we would just leave. Right? People would just leave. This is such a small place. 80% are not Monegasque people. I have no Monegasque citizenship. We are from all over the world. We would just leave. And he knows that. And for that reason, it's not happening. And this is the same with me, right? On the one hand, we have a decision making about lawsuits between me and the residents on an independent third party. And then the competition and the small place is guaranteeing also and my reputation as a business person. That would be in danger that I'm behaving well. I'm comparing myself to a cruise ship captain because on the high seas, he's also, there's no other law applicable. He can do whatever he wants. He's the highest executive power on the cruise ship. But he could flog people because they were not well dressed at the captain's dinner. But he's not because he has a commercial interest, right? You never hear about that a cruise ship captain is misusing his executive power, and that is in a way the same here. And so I think you would have a much better position than in a traditional state.
How long has your Free Private Cities initiative been going? When did you start it?
I started about 3 years ago. And I have already been approached by people who had projects in the making. I think even the seasteaders were kind of impressed by the mechanism. And I know that Joe Quirk, for example, likes the idea of having a contract and doing all this on a contractual basis. I'm myself writing a book at the moment. It's the German version is just the printing press, and 2 months or 3 months from now, I will come up with an English version. As I said, there are some projects all over the world which are not completely free private cities, but which go into that direction. And I hope that a couple of months from now, we can make a first announcement.
What's your background?
I'm a lawyer by education, but after several years of practicing, I thought this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I switched into the industry and venture capital, and eventually found my own company, which was a mining and oil and gas company called Deutsche Rohstoff. Became a very successful and larger company, is now listed at Frankfurt Stock Exchange. And after 8 years of being a CEO, I could retire at the end of 2014 because we were successful. Then I basically decided that I will use the rest of my life. I'm 50 years old, so I still have some years to go. Use the rest of my life for making Free Private Cities a reality, because you have to be persistent. It's a big project, no doubt about that. And it's not easy to negotiate sovereignty away from countries, no doubt about that. But it's frankly going quicker than I expected, right? I mean, there are already projects on the table.
Tell us something about the conference that the Startup Societies Foundation is holding. You're going to be speaking there.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It's on the 9th and 10th May in Washington, D.C. The idea is that Puerto Rico is looking for new ideas. And you know that basically they are broke, and now they are open to new concepts, new projects. And there's a whole, I would say, movement, Startup Societies movement, from people, including myself, who have ideas how to structure new societies on a voluntary basis, not against the states, but in cooperation with the governments. And I'm one of the speakers, and we are going to offer new ideas to people from Puerto Rico and everybody who's interested in that. And a lot of interesting speakers will be there. Tom Bell from California, there, or Oliver Porter from who privatized Sandy Springs, and again myself talking about the free private cities model and how this could fit into an existing state.
I want to ask you the kind of question that a extreme skeptic would ask, and I mean that here. Now I'm talking about libertarians who are jaded on anything that would. Well, they're just jaded. They feel like anything you might try is going to be compromised or destroyed or regulated out of existence by the state. So, for example, I'm just looking at a tweet that I found on the Startup Society's website. It's very inspiring. It says, "Don't argue about regulation. Build Uber. Don't argue about monetary policy. Build Bitcoin. Don't argue about it. Build the alternative." Now, that's great. That's super inspiring. We need to hear more than that, more of that. But I could easily imagine somebody coming back with, you build Uber and the state tries to litigate it out of existence. You build Bitcoin and the state tries to regulate it and tax it and make it impossible to use. So there's no point in trying. I get a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly one of the real issues, right? I mean, I've been discussing this for 1 or 2 years now with all kinds of people, and I think I'm relatively aware of what is the real problem and what is just a perceived "I don't want that thing." Well, this is certainly one of the real issues, right? What if, for example, the government makes a contract with you, and then there's an election, and a demagogue comes into power and say, "We have been betrayed. We want our city back," and all that. I mean, that certainly is an issue. But look, here's the thing: we can dock on this special economic zone thing. Most countries have signed international investor protection agreements, be it bilateral agreements between states or multilateral agreements. And the content is always the same. They say, okay, we want to attract foreign investors. And if the investors are in our country and we change the law, which leads to a practical expropriation of those investors, we are willing to be sued before international arbitrational tribunals, and we are going to pay damages. So most countries have signed such contracts. So what the trick here now is, to give you a better protection against what you said, is that you're just founding the company that is governing this or managing this city in a country that has a bilateral investment protection with the host nation. And as such, you're protected in cases they just withdraw everything. I mean, it's an issue, but But the point is that you then have, and I think I consider this is our sharpest sword. You have something you can, okay, you have just taken away the legal protection you were guaranteeing us for 50 years. So we are going to sue you and we are going to seize all property you have outside your country. And that is something that is for not easy for a country, because that also means it will be difficult to get state bonds and signed and all that in the future. That is one pillar. The other one is the moment we are successful and we are creating jobs, it is basically not really a good move for a country to eradicate that. Take, for example, Hong Kong. I mean, the Chinese took over in 1997. And it is conceivable that they say, well, we have the military power, we can just take Hong Kong away and the British will never come back and insist on this 50-year one country, two systems thing. Right, they are militarily too weak, by the way, but they let Hong Kong be and let Hong Kong prosper. And the reason for that, because it was the only reason, was because they said, okay, Hong Kong will have a bigger value for us than as it would be just a provincial city. And in our case, imagine that the free private city would prosper, would create jobs, and then the government would say, we want to have the city back. I would tell them, look, gentlemen, here are 50,000 jobs have been created, and by 20,000 settlers who were coming from other places than your country. And if you come in with your troops, we will all move away, and all you will lose all your jobs, or most of them. And you, by the way, we will sue you, and you will have a bad reputation for any future foreign investment. So I think these are not super guarantees, but these are relatively big points we can make. So these are incentives that are giving us a kind of stability. It's not just the paper that has been signed. There's a real incentive behind that, and I think this is something that goes in our favor.
You've mentioned that there are some projects out there that may not be quite what you envision, but nevertheless represent some departure from the status quo that are worth investigating. Now, I promise if you share one of these with us, my listeners will not write to you saying, well, that's not a purely free society. What's the matter with you? They're wonderful people who understand you just got started and you're working with what's available. Do you feel comfortable sharing a potential example with us?
Yeah, look, the point, I will mention some areas of the world. The point is that most of them are still in a negotiation phase, so it's politically not too wise to make too much noise at the moment.
Right, sure.
But you or your readers or your listeners have probably heard about some of those projects. You mentioned seasteading, right? They are in seasteads are in French Polynesia, and they are, other than the original concept, they are negotiating now a land portion, a so-called sea zone, where they could start building their platforms. And that brings them in exactly the same situation that I have. They have to negotiate with a sovereign nation about a partial sovereignty within that state. And that's exactly happening at the moment in the Pacific, in French Polynesia. There's another group in Myanmar. There's an autonomous part of Myanmar on the border to Thailand, and it's called Muay Phu. And this group, it's a group from Singapore, they also want to build a free city there. Then you might have heard about some groups in Honduras. Honduras has a special law called the Cede Law, which makes it possible to establish something that comes relatively close, not to a free private city, but to an independent zone. And this is also very advanced, and I'm basically advising all of those projects. Then we have just heard that Puerto Rico might be something that is interested in that. In Georgia, not the U.S. Georgias, but the Georgia at the Black Sea in Europe, at the border between Europe and Asia, there is a special zone in the making that might have a similar autonomy. And what we have already seen is in the United Arabian Emirates, there are two zones that have a different legal system. They have basically common law, British common law, or something that is based on British common law. Within, it's a Dubai International Financial Center and the Abu Dhabi Global Market. And then you have maybe heard about the new strongman in Saudi Arabia, who plans to do a real country that on its a private country. It's called NEOM. On the Dead Sea, and so far what I have seen, it that is also something that comes relatively close to a private governance model. People have guaranteed liberties, which are much higher than in the rest of Saudi Arabia, et cetera, et cetera. So I would say there's really a tendency going on. And as you said, it's probably not perfect, and especially anarcho-capitalists are not happy because it's not exactly what they think of a contractual society. But we are going into that direction that we will try out different things. We will get more freedom. And at the end, the market will decide, right? Maybe the market is not wanting anarcho-capitalist model, but they rather prefer my more classical liberal model, or some people like this more and other people prefer that. And maybe people want even more, I would say, community, more kibbutz-like, not even having your own property. We don't know. I mean, let the market decide. If libertarians think that the market is the good answer to many of the problems, or if not all, then why not transfer this market to our living together? I call it the market of living together. And then let the people decide what they want. And then we will see what works and what doesn't.
What's your website?
The website is freeprivatecities.com. One word, freeprivatecities.com. And here's the thing. There's a newsletter, and you can subscribe. Everybody could subscribe to that newsletter if he or she was interested in what's going on. This newsletter is not coming very often, maybe every 2 or 3 months. But in the newsletter, I describe what is the current development of some of the projects I've mentioned, of projects where I am involved, other projects where I'm not involved. So the people who are really interested in either copying that model and doing something by themselves, or become a settler or business owner eventually in one of those areas, I would invite you to subscribe to my newsletter.
All right. So we will recommend that, freeprivatecities.com. I'll link to that also, and the conference that we mentioned, a link to these things on the show notes page for today, which is tomwoods.com/1126. Well, Titus, thanks for your time today and for your entrepreneurial energies that are being spent in a very creative and potentially very important direction. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
All right, folks, I got to tell you about a brand new podcast created by Tom Woods Show listeners. It's actually a network of two podcasts that you can check out over at roadstoliberty.com. It's roads, the number two, and liberty.com. And the first of the two podcasts is called Roads to Liberty, and it covers politics in Nebraska in particular from a libertarian perspective. The other one is called Guardians of Liberty, and that one is focused on more national issues, and it covers recent events, politics, culture, and economics. Great folks who've started both of those, and I urge you to give them a try over at Roads to Liberty, Roads, the number two, and liberty.com. Get yourself nice publicity like this for your site that you're about to create. When you get your hosting through my link, you get lots of neat bonuses. Check them out at tomwoods.com/publicity. All right, let's see what I got coming up. I got Owen Benjamin coming up on a couple of episodes from now, the comedian we've talked to before. He's run into some, well, interesting challenges, and I want to talk to him about those. Tomorrow I've got a fellow from politics. It's not Ron Paul, by the way, coming back on. I will actually have an episode with me talking to Ron Paul coming up in the next couple of weeks. And so some fun things coming up. And then next week, we are going to finally have that debate on tariffs, on Trump and tariffs. And that should be interesting. It's two friends of the show who will be debating each other on that one. Speaking of debates, I hope to see you in New York City at the Soho Forum on April 16th, 2018, for the debate between Bob Murphy and George Selgin. Yeah, it's a little nerdy. We're talking about fractional reserve banking and its effects on market economies. But very, very interesting if you ask me. Dave Smith, another friend of the show, will be opening with comedy. You can't possibly miss it. Check out the details at thesohoforum.org. I will be there in person. I hope to see you there. And remember, all you have to do is go up to Gene Epstein, the host of the event, and just say the name Tom Woods, and you get a free drink at the bar. So hope to see you then. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.